Welcome. Paul Decker is with us today. Since 2007, he's been the president and chief executive officer of Mathematica, the policy research firm. He's a nationally recognized expert in the design and implementation of evaluations of education and workforce development programs. He just completed his year-long term as the president of the Association for Public Policy Analysis and Management, or APAM. Last month, he delivered his keynote address that focused on policymaking, public management, and evidence-based research. Among his points, he challenged the notion that program evaluation is simply a tool to justify continued or discontinued funding for a program. I'm very glad to have him with us today by phone from Princeton, New Jersey, to share some of his insights from that speech. Paul, welcome.
Thanks, Andy. It's great to be here.
One of the arguments of your speech was that research and evidence aren't realizing their full potential in terms of helping to improve public policy because people sometimes prefer not to measure the effects of programs. And a critical reason for that, you argue, is a fear of how evidence might be used to drive decisions about that policy. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, one of the issues is the sense that research can be seen as risky by the people who have a specific interest in a policy. And that is that they're reluctant to set up rigorous testing methods that have the potential for showing that their favorite ideas don't work, and they respond to research accordingly if it generates findings that they don't agree with. And some of that comes from the way in which research and particularly program evaluation tend to be framed, where often the framing is that in an evaluation, you have two possible results. The program is found to be effective and funding is maintained, or the program is found to be ineffective and the program is defunded. And often that leads to what I've characterized as trench warfare between advocates who have a tendency to reject research that's not clearly program affirming, and on the other side, program opponents who look at research findings as an opportunity to shrink government. And unfortunately, as you know, in a lot of cases, we have evaluations that show programs don't work. And so the end result of that is often generating stalemate because despite the evidence that a program's failed at achieving its stated objectives, the program's still maintained because the advocates are such strong supporters. They find a way to maintain the program and they want to maintain it as is, despite the evidence. And in some cases, the advocates are even working against conducting any further research on the issue. And to me, that strikes me as the worst possible outcome, that you've got a status quo, it's shown to be ineffective, at least against the stated objectives of the program, and yet you keep the program exactly the way it is, and then you close off the possibility of ongoing research.
So, Paul, I want to tie this back to practitioners who want to strengthen a results focus in their agency or their jurisdiction. A message that I'm hearing from you is that they should be aware that framing evaluation as an up or down exercise, you know, existential evaluation, should this program exist or not, can make evaluation a lightning rod for advocates on either side that can be defensive and are likely to challenge the outcome of an evaluation or even doing an evaluation, and that that reduces our overall level of evaluation into what works and what doesn't in government.
Exactly. And one of the issues is the framing, because the advocates, presumably in a lot of cases, are advocates for the population being served. And so one can imagine a situation where there's a program that's serving that population, the program's shown to be ineffective. Their reaction is, well, they still want to maintain the program because they're worried if the program is eradicated, the resources will be diverted elsewhere. The population of interest just won't be served at all. And so one of the issues is kind of how might you reframe that situation so that you'd have greater flexibility to adjust programs in the face of negative findings or continue searching effectively for alternative programs still geared toward serving that same target population.
An example of this type of trench warfare, as you call it, occurred with the Upward Bound program, as you noted in your speech. Tell us about what happened there.
Sure. So Upward Bound is a program that serves economically disadvantaged students, and it's focused on trying to improve their prospects, both in terms of preparation for college and also getting into college and then being successful. So in 1991, the Department of Education contracted with Mathematica to conduct the national evaluation of Upward Bound. That evaluation was conducted over the course of 17 years, believe it or not. And it was a very ambitious study. It was conducted not only across the country, but conducted in a way that the sites and the program were selected to be nationally representative. And it was also conducted using random assignment. So we had a control group that was denied access to Upward Bound and a treatment group that was offered the possibility of participating on Upward Bound. And we were able to compare the outcomes between the control group and the treatment group to assess the impact. And what we found was that looking at the high school graduation rates, rates of enrollment in post-secondary education, rates of enrollment in four-year college, and also various measures of post-secondary completion, we didn't find much of a difference in any of those measures. So we didn't find any detectable difference that was due to the effect of Upward Bound, suggesting the program really wasn't achieving the objectives that it was attempting to achieve. So in the face of that, we got into the situation like I was referring to before, where there was initial reaction to those findings with the Bush administration at the time talking about defunding Upward Bound because of its apparent ineffectiveness. And then the youth advocacy community responded to the findings by trying to question the evaluation itself. And in this case, they even worked to prohibit any further research on Upward Bound.
Tell that story a little bit more, if you would, Paul. There was actually the legislation that blocked further evaluation.
Yeah, so what happened was eventually the Bush administration backed off from defunding Upward Bound, and the Department of Education attempted to pursue another evaluation of the program. And because of the experience with the first Upward Bound study and the advocacy community's desire to keep the program as is, they fought against that subsequent evaluation, presumably fearing it would have the potential of showing the same thing the original evaluation found. And so they went to Congress, basically to get Congress to write legislation that both canceled the evaluation, but the legislation also prohibited any further random assignment studies of the TRIO programs. The Upward Bound is one of a group of programs that are under the label of TRIO programs that are focused on college preparation. And in terms of casting doubt on the findings from our first evaluation, as I talked about in my speech at APAM, I characterize that as a misdemeanor. That's kind of business as usual in our industry, that people with a policy interest are always trying to question the methods or the findings from an evaluation if they don't agree with those findings. But in the case of the second aspect of their effort, which is to prohibit any further research, as I talked about in the speech, that's what I consider to be really beyond the pale. But that's the kind of result you can get when the advocates want to do everything they can to protect the status quo. That's when a misdemeanor becomes a felony, is the way I characterize that.
So, Paul, I want to get to your suggestions for how to move beyond this trench warfare and enable more evaluation, more analysis of what works and how to improve programs. Am I right that one way to do this is to frame evaluation less as an up or down litmus test, although sometimes up or down evaluations can surely be useful, but for existing ongoing programs, it can be more useful to frame evaluation as which approaches within a program work best? How can we implement best practices within a program in order to improve performance?
Right. And, you know, I want to be fair that there's a lot of work that's done in evaluations that addresses just those issues. The problem is a lot of times they get ignored in the course of the focus on the narrow framing of whether a program has overall effectiveness or not. And so some of the other issues tend to get ignored. Upward Bound was a good example, I think, where there was probably a really interesting discussion and important discussion to have around targeting of the program. In the case of Upward Bound, I say that because the group that was targeted for services was a group that seemed to have surprisingly successful outcomes, even without the intervention. I was just looking at the control group. Just to give you an example, the high school graduation rate for the control group exceeded 90%. Well, that's not only a high rate for any disadvantaged population, that's higher than the national average for the United States. And so, you know, it raises the question of, well, what's the targeting that's going on that's generating a targeted population that in the absence of service is graduating from high school at a 90% rate? And it also makes you question how big of an impact can Upward Bound have on the high school graduation rate if we know they start with from a baseline of 90% graduation. You know, what can we hope to achieve? 93% graduation rate, 94% graduation rate? I don't know, but there's not a lot of room for improvement there.
There was information within the evaluation, in other words, that could be used to better target and likely improve the performance of the program, but in the heated context of the situation, that tended to be ignored.
Right, and it's also the case that a lot of the research that relates to some of these other issues tends not to be as definitive as the up or down determination, and therefore it's harder to discuss with the same level of confidence. But part of what you should take away from an evaluation like that is where should the subsequent research be? And in fact, that was the focus of the subsequent evaluation that ended up being canceled by Congress. And so that was unfortunate to lose kind of that next link in the chain.
I'd like to conclude, Paul, by asking you to talk about one of the recommendations in your speech, which I think has applicability to any level of government. And I'd like to read a few sentences from your speech. You argue that a useful approach is to, quote, maintain an ongoing commitment of resources to the population targeted by the original legislation, but continue to study the problem and search for programs that serve the population effectively. This approach gets us out of the binary mode of maintain or defund, but it's predicated on spending more time thinking about how we approach the problem and less on narrowly targeting a solution, unquote. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, one of the issues is kind of how do you neutralize this in a way so that you get people to think about the potential for improving programs or evolving programs, both in cases where an overall evaluation might show a program is effective or show it's ineffective. And I talked before about a lot of the fear comes from when people are worried that an evaluation that generates negative findings may lead to a defunding of the program. So it seems to me one way to neutralize that is to make the funding that's targeted to the population being served by the program, make that funding stable for that population of interest without necessarily guaranteeing a status quo in the program. So you take TRIO programs as an example. We commit close to $1 billion to support those programs. One option would be to say we will continue to conduct research on the Upward Bound program, and in our effort to try to search for ways to improve the program or identify alternatives to the program that might serve the population more effectively, but we'll do it in a setting where the funding is maintained. So we'll continue to honor that financial commitment to the population of interest. We'll experiment around with the best way to serve that population. Now, you know, I don't want to be too naive about this. I can imagine that there's still advocates out there who will prefer the status quo, even if the funding is maintained. They'll still want to protect the program against any changes. But to my way of thinking, that reveals them as advocates not for the population of interest, but advocates for the program or for the program operators. I don't find that to be necessarily productive in terms of adding to the debate, which is really should be more about how do you improve the conditions of the population being served, regardless of what the program is that's serving that population.
And policy leaders could convey that commitment, demonstrate that commitment in different ways, I assume.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, it could just be focusing on framing the policy discussion that way, even if there's not specific legislation regarding that. I should point out that this is not the same as saying those financial commitments should be there forever and ever. There may be changes over time, for example, changes in the population where there's a determination by Congress, for example, that the population doesn't need to be served anymore for one reason or another. Or there may be a changing attitude about whether the government should be involved in helping that group, or even that the government determination that there's no effective way for the government to help the group. But I don't think it should be based on just a negative set of findings from a program evaluation. I think that has to be more of a fundamental discussion about the role of government in assisting whatever the population of interest is.
Paul, congratulations on a successful year as president of the Public Policy Association, APAM, and thanks very much for sharing your insights with us.
Thanks, Andy.